Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5. The Fanatic hanging out until 8 o'clock solo. Be joined by Rob Motti at that point. We'll team up until 10, and then Rob will take you on until midnight. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard as we continue to discuss those Philadelphia 76ers without Joel Embiid now for the near future. Kind of an open-ended timetable. Will be evaluated in 1 or 2 weeks. And we'll have to see what life looks like now without the big fella. Josh Rabick's producing. Joe Torti here with you, and we'll go back to the phones. Sean and Lansdale's next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Sean.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to say, after looking at that Celtics game, by the way, great win, felt great. What I learned was that the spacing issue is not something that we can't fix. Because if you take, really think about it like this, you got Ben, Al, and Joel. Mm-hmm. Right? Crunch time, that's our lineup, that's our go-to. The issue is you have three guys who live and want to live in the paint, right? And all three are most effective when they're in the paint. So the issue becomes, how can you use them all effectively? Well, the answer is you can't. The maximum you can use is two. In the Celtics game, what I learned was Ben and Al worked pretty efficiently because Al's smart enough to work off of it, and he's smart enough to get out of Ben's way. The issue is when all three of them are on the floor, one of them has to sacrifice, and then someone else sags off, and it's just not great. So what I'm thinking is when time comes, and it's playoff time, and when we're serious and Joel is back and everyone's healthy, what we're going to need is Al Horford not to be on the floor. Mm. And even though he's great and he's a great anchor, it's just a lineup thing. It's a way that we can combat defensive strategies, which we've seen all year. Joe is going to be the dominant guy. Ben is going to be the dunker spot. Imagine those two working in synchrony in the paint, where Ben is smart enough to pass out of it, and Joe, as soon as Ben's guy comes over to double team, Joe can just throw up a little lob right there to Ben. Or if they can just get that 1-2 down low game going, Ben gets downhill, Joe's down there ready to take it. I mean, we can just see that become so much better. But with Al out there, and it's not Al's fault, it's just spacing. With Al out there, it becomes a three big man lineup, essentially, mm-hmm. and that's just not what we need.
So who's Love out Al, instead?
I would put Matisse, or hopefully if we can get some type of a rotational shooter, 3-and-D guy. I would put him out there if he's better than Matisse, but I don't know what it is. The kid brings an energy. Mm-hmm. I really just hope that he can play smart as he's learned to do so when playoff comes. That's really what I'm hoping. But I'm confident. I like what I saw, and I know people are saying, oh, man, you know, we're going to see without Joel Embiid, we're better, right? That's rubbish.
Well, you can't get better without Embiid. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it, Sean. And you're right about that. Like, when you're adding, when you get him back, it's effectively adding the best center in the NBA to your lineup. Like, effectively through a trade, if you want to put it that way. Right? Like, when you get him back, you're adding the top center in the NBA. Hard to imagine that you could get worse by doing that. Very difficult. It seems like if you do get worse from doing that, it's more of a coaching deployment strategy issue rather than the players themselves. And if the team just runs better without Joel Embiid than with Joel Embiid, then you need somebody new to run the team because that's ridiculous. All right. Let's talk about the guy running the team right now. He joined the Mike Missinelli show earlier today. Brett Brown joined the program. And if you missed it, here's what it sounded like.
Let's welcome in Brett Brown on the Comcast Business Hotline. Brett, great win last night.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It's always good to beat Boston.
You know, that was a great NBA game. And you've had a few hours to digest the game from last night. What was your take on how you guys played?
Two things most stood out to me. I thought defensively, when it mattered most in the fourth period, I thought that we showed signs of embracing sort of life without Joel and playing sort of a different way and doing it successfully, one. And two, I thought the execution down the stretch, just whether it was, you know, not turning the ball over or getting efficient shots, getting the ball into the correct people's hands, I was proud of the way that that we walked that game down.
So it turned around really in the third quarter where you made a big run to get back in the game and you had a lot of energy in that third quarter. What were you telling them at halftime to do?
Just that, you know, the score, I thought that we poked ourselves in the eye right before halftime. You could feel it swinging a little bit. But I thought that we were on the right path. Like my my anxiety comes when you just don't feel like, you know, the path is right or the spirit's right. I thought their spirit was good. I thought the attention to detail with how we prepared and the scouting report was good, and I tried to just more remind them of that.
All right, so let's discuss the Joel being out part of how you're going to have to play now, because let's face it, realistically, he's probably going to be out a month. I know he's going to get reevaluated in 2 weeks, but you know, surgery's no joke, and then the rehab and the whole bit. And you alluded to it yesterday. You're going to have to play differently. You're going to play up-tempo, and you're going to have to play hard scrambling defense. Is this it was a sustainable last night. Is this sustainable for that period of time without Joel?
Well, let's go to defense, because you used a word that I don't want to do. Like, I don't want to scramble. I don't want to scramble. I do think that there will be elements of our pressure that will put us in more scrambled environments. This is true. But in general, like, that's the punishment of the NBA. If you're in rotations too much, the league is too good. It's too offensive. They shoot the ball well enough. They drive it well enough. You're not in position to defensive rebound. It's a recipe for losing. And so I do hope to avoid the scramble while sort of admitting, you know, you don't have the luxury of 7'2" all defensive player and Joel Embiid behind it. And so with Al, you know, let's just go there first. What's Al going to be in pick and roll defense? And without doing a clinic, you know, we have answers, and it will affect people behind that. If you go to just offense, it's true. Like, we need to play fast. It needs to be a little bit more of a track meet. We don't have the post target or the need to wait for the post target like I felt like we did in Joel. And so both sides of the ball on first glance, that's my take on life without Joe.
All right. Now, it seemed to free up Al a little bit last night. He almost had an awakening last night. And you could see that you guys played differently, and he seems more energized. The whole thing about this year was trying to get him to blend, and it was coming along slowly. You were trying to figure out how to make him effective to play with Joel. So now, all this time that Joel is out is taking away time to blend that particular situation. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's obviously not ideal. If you had a perfect world, you'd be playing with Joel and inching this thing along. But in the event, or with the circumstance that we don't have Joe, I see daylight. I see a positive. I feel like we can rekindle his confidence and make him more of a focal point. I think the mistake that sometimes we all make is, you know, effectively he was sort of our third option, you know, at times our fourth option. And you know, he didn't really have a chance to feature as much as he did with previous teams. We all get he's a gifted pick and pop guy. I think that the difference with Al Horford in Boston and in Atlanta was when he blended pick and pop and pick and roll. So I think this time frame, you know, we can rekindle some spirit.
All right. Now, the people that knock Ben Simmons had to see last night's game for what you obviously see in Ben and the all-around game and what he does in all areas. I thought he was spectacular last night. And I know you did too, right?
Absolutely. And I tell you what, like, I respect you saying that, because if it's not like he's got 30, 15, and 10, oftentimes, like, the subtleties of things that don't appear on a stat sheet get ignored. And I hear you, Mike. I agree with you.
But there is the elephant in the room, and so we have to address that now. Now, it's you have come out recently and thrown it publicly. You hadn't done that before, and I know you think this is an overblown story at times, but you did come out and say you want him to shoot 1-3 a game, and then you said I failed at that. So when we look at this whole situation, how is it going to cure itself when Joel does come back and you're going to have to need certain things from Ben Simmons?
Well, it is true. I'm always amused, I think, and that really is the word, at the attention that this gets. And like Ben and I talk about, like, do you realize that if you shot 1-3 a game, in the blink of an eye, this just disappears. It just goes away. But it's something that, you know, has received attention, and now it's gained momentum, and so here we are. And I do think, like, the things that probably you or the listeners should hear the loudest is my whole thing is space. Like, when you're not the person that is in the post, where are you? When you're not the person that is in a pick and roll. You're three other people somewhere on the floor. Where are you? When there is dribble penetration, where are you? If Tobias has the ball in early offense and he's a dribble out guy and he's sort of conquering the middle with a live ball and you're running a lane, where are you? And so my world is space. And I think that if we can continue to get him to space, then he's going to figure out how to spend his money. And when I dissect the game, and I do it every single game with him, you know, it's not as frequent as you might think. And he's so gifted a slasher. Like, he sees daylight. He's either going to punish a blind defender for an offensive rebound, or it's just going to chew up empty space by running it up somebody's shoulders. And so somewhere in the middle of all that, we concede it does have to happen. It hasn't happened to date, so therefore we have this conversation. And I own it. Like, I'm the coach, and it's still something that I feel responsible to help him grow this part of his game.
Now, Brad, I ask you this, because going public, was that a reflection of your frustration? Because a lot of people think you don't tell him to shoot. And the whole staff, the whole world has pretty much communicated to him that he's got to shoot a basketball. So by going public, are you trying to, like, speed that process up, and that's your last resort?
I'm doing whatever I can do to help him. And, like, everybody would have their own opinion of what that looks like. And I feel a responsibility to help a 23-year-old find a new toy. And I feel like once he does this, because I see him shoot where others don't all the time, and he's a capable shooter. And I do think it's going to happen, and I think we're all going to look in the rearview mirror, and him especially, and think, can you believe this? This thing reached this level of attention for what? And I think that he's going to shoot one, he's going to make one, then he's going to do it again. And I feel like there will be momentum, because it hasn't happened. Here it is. And so my decision on how do I help move him along, sometimes it's a little bit public. It very much is private. And I want to do this with him. And to date, we have not done this. And so therefore, I make the comment I made a few days ago. And it's just something that, you know, is on my mind, but probably not as much as others.
Was he bothered by your comment publicly?
I don't think there was anything wrong with it. It wasn't, and you know, I've been in the city with you for now 7 years. It's not my style. Like, I don't embarrass anybody in the newspaper, and it's just not what I believe in. And I said what I said because I think it wasn't meant to be a jab at all. And he knows me. We've known each other for a very, very long time. And he gets it. Like, if you pulled him aside and you downloaded him, he understands that this, too, has to be something that he has to own. He's got to own it, and I'm here to help him.
So he didn't snap back at you and say, why'd you do that?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So let's get to this question, though. Why don't you think he does it?
We all get our ideas, and it's stuff that, you know, it's something that he, I personally think that he uses the space and ends up penetrating more and can dunk more and can offensive rebound more. I think a lot of it is he has had success, different success, using this space and achieving different results. And, you know, so it's a habit we got to break. And from time to time, he's going to have to shoot it. I mean, and just look at this interview. We've just spoken 5 minutes about Ben Simmons 3. I mean, really, it's a... So I'm happy to talk as much as you want to, Mike. But
no, I got you. Now, yeah. let me just a couple quick ones before I let you go. You know, most people look at this team, and I have the opinion, I don't know if you have it or not, you probably do, that you probably could use somebody a little more offensive off the bench that you can count on to get your buckets. Do you believe that, and do you think that will happen?
I think that, I can't say loud enough the respect and appreciation I have for Elton Brand. You know, it's a very seamless pairing. He and I coached him. There's no, like, hidden agendas. It's incredibly open and transparent. And he and I talk all the time about, if April 15th were tomorrow, like, what do we look into our crystal ball? What's our pre-mortem? What do we wish we had? And in the meantime, like, we all get trade deadlines are coming up. And, you know, we're going to take what we got and try to make it work. The city should be elated with Matisse Thybulle. And I thought Furkan last night was great, and James made some big shots. I feel like the thing that is a little bit different this year than in previous years in your rendering it into like a catch shot JJ guy, I think.
Yes.
I feel like, yeah, no, I hear you. Like, there's a pick and roll, a live ball guy. It's why Trey Burke has come in and put his hand up. And he's different. People that can create off the dribble. People can run a pick and roll. People that can get into the seams of a zone. You know, there is a need, I think, for that too. And we're trying to develop and grow the current roster to be able to do that. And in the event that Elton decides to do something in a few weeks, then I'm with him.
All right, last question. It's about Pell. Now, he looks like he can bring some quick five position energy, like a few years when Rashawn Holmes gave you that kind of energy. And you're going to have to decide whether you have to sign him to a full contract. What are the prospects of that?
Well, let me talk on my side of the fence, and ultimately I'm going to tell you Elton's going to figure it out. But I'll talk to your points because I agree with them. He is different. He's really different, you know, and you bring up Rashawn. That's not my analogy is more Nerlens, because like he's a legitimate rim protector. He's a fantastic roller. You know, and he's big, 6'11" and some maybe. And so like he got live legs. He can switch out on the pick and roll. There are a lot of NBA skills that he has that I think are very attractive to me. And so Elton will figure out what that means with roster construction and, you know, caps and all that. But I can tell you, I thought he was really good last night. And he for sure has NBA skills that we should pay attention to.
All right, you got a couple of tough games coming up. One in Dallas with Luka. I assume Ben will play Luka?
You know, you'd suspect so. How much fun is that kid to watch? Like, we played him in his very first game in China. And it takes you about 2 seconds to realize the unique gifts that he has. You always, when I'm watching him, you know, you don't realize how quick he is in his mind and with the ball and deceptive with his dribble. He's not slow of foot. Like, he makes up for it with just quickness with the ball in his head. He's really, really good. I look forward to, almost from a fan standpoint, you know, seeing him. Ben Simmons on him, you'd expect some. And I think that, you know, we may have to look at some double teams as well.
All right, Brett, listen, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. Great night. I win last night. See if we can keep it going.
Okay, Mike, thanks.
All right, there he is, Brett Brown joining Mike Missinelli earlier today. And Josh, there's a lot of ground covered in that one. You start out with the exception to the scramble language for how you're going to survive without Joel Embiid. Then, of course, is how is Al Horford going to gel here? Man, do you think that Brett Brown likes talking about Ben Simmons shooting three-pointers? I mean, I can't tell if this is his favorite thing to talk about or if he just never, ever wants to discuss this ever again, because that is obviously the big focus of conversation for a lot of different people for good reason. And then, of course, finish up with Norvell Pell. Yeah, you think he likes talking about Ben Simmons in the three?
Mike didn't let him off the hook either. He tried to kind of push it along, and then the next three questions all about Ben Simmons and the shot.
See, that's why Mike's the best. But yeah, the thing about it now is we might never know now. If Embiid is out now, well, I mean, you've got Simmons needing to pick up the slack on the low post. You've only got so many big bodies. You know, you can't have him out there shooting threes. Well, what about the fact that Joel Embiid shoots threes? No, no, no. This is different. We got a different scenario, different situation that we've got to deal with. I get the sense from Brett Brown, and maybe this is unfair. If it is, let me know. I get the sense from Brett Brown, to some degree, that he believes that he's doing all of the right stuff and the results aren't there. Like, the impression that I get from Brett is, like, I don't know really what else I'm supposed to do beyond what I'm doing now, and the results aren't always there. However, as he points out, it's always nice to get a win against Boston. You beat Milwaukee on Christmas, right? Like, there are lots of big-time, high-profile wins to go with some of those losses. Now, Dale Wilson tweets in, and a couple other people have tweeted in, and I want to share the tweets. Dale Wilson 311. I always thought the Sixers kind of played better without Embiid. Maybe not better, but smoother. Well, I think that smoother is an interesting way to put it, because in the modern NBA, very few teams do have an actual center. There's probably five or six centers in the entire league that you'd consider to be actual anchors down there on the low post. So it's definitely going to look different. Definitely going to look different from a lot of the things that you see, especially considering the fact that the Sixers have not outwardly prioritized securing three-point jump shooters up and down the roster, coming off the bench, etc., right? You've seen them coming in the starting lineup with Tobias Harris and with Josh Richardson. So it's not as though there's a dearth of three-point shooting, but it is something that they haven't stacked the roster with. We'll put it that way. And then, of course, a similar tweet comes in from Philly Mikey J. The problem is, if he, being Simmons, plays much stronger with Embiid out, how do you get him to play the same way when Embiid is healthy? Well, I guess it depends on what it looks like. Because on one hand, if he's taking over games and he's a 35-point scorer and he's getting 15 rebounds and 12 assists or whatever, well, I would just think that naturally that's not a likely long-term situation when Embiid comes back, because there are touches that need to be doled out to Embiid and scoring opportunities in Embiid's hands that the team and that Ben Simmons probably feel good about. But if he has, if he shows growth, let's put it that way, if there's some elements of a mid-range game, if he's more aggressive going to the basket, if he's more effective from the free throw line, I think there are a lot of different things that he can add or not even add. That's a bad word for it. Showcase. Things that he can showcase that he's already put together that he hasn't had the chance to show because of all of the space that Joel Embiid takes up, the touches that he has to have, the way that the offense kind of goes to Embiid. Well, then those are things that I anticipate would pay dividends in the postseason, knowing that you can count on Ben Simmons to deliver the goods when all of the chips are on the table and when you absolutely have to have it. Couple of open phone lines, 610-632-0975. What do you make of the Sixers without Ben Simmons? Or check that, without Joel Embiid. And then, of course, on the other side, there's an Eagles question that's kind of been, you know, eating me up. I've actually got a couple of questions that I want to ask you and get your reaction to. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic. Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out until 10 o'clock. At 8, I'll be joined by Rob Motti. Rob and I will be hanging out in studio, sharing the microphone until I vacate the premises, and then Rob will take you from 10 until midnight. And then, of course, I guess it's too much host to handle, because for the first time ever, in my knowledge, there's also a duo team-up producer tandem in which Josh Rabick and Pat Egan will somehow find a way to share the luxurious expanse of producer studio that we've got back there. Now, Josh, is this because you just couldn't handle the Motti Torti connection, or how did Coach Camille end up putting this together?
I actually saw Coach earlier today. He was like, it's too much star power. We need both of you guys running the board right now. So, yeah, here we are.
I'm glad. I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you're ready, and you have support from Pat Egan to be able to make it through this fun time that we're going to have here together. The GZ19 for life with maybe the tweet of the evening, because he sums up the Brett Brown experience. After listening to Brett, you forget all about wanting a new coach because he's such a great guy. And like, side note, you listen to him, it's like, oh, this guy's the only basketball coach. Like, there is no other basketball coach that you could ever want. But then, boom, you lose by 20 or more to a team with only 10 wins, and then you're calling for his job again. That is the full Brett Brown experience. But the problem is, in between there, he's also going to take out, like, the top three teams in the NBA. And then you're going to go to, like, Orlando and just get housed by the Magic or something like that. Like, that is the full Brett Brown experience. Now, I know that there have been people on either side of this the anti-Brett Brown. Got to get him out at any cost. I'm sick of him. He's not winning any championships. We've been at this for a long time, et cetera, et cetera. There's that camp. And then there's the camp of, well, you know, he is still working with a brand new roster effectively this year. And there were a lot of other things that people could bring up. The lack of talent. The fact that you're breaking in Ben Simmons, the fact that you're breaking in Joel Embiid, trying to get those guys to play together. You've got Al Horford in the mix there as well. And all of those things are valid. All of that is true. But you do have some other people, some other coaches in the NBA who have had to quickly get talent to play together and has done a better job than Brett Brown has. The thing that does push me into the keep Brett camp is pretty simple. The Sixers, and I've said this earlier in the show, the Sixers are beating all the good teams. Like the teams that they're facing off against, that they're going to face off against in the playoffs, outside of Indiana, which was my big caveat. Like I said, I don't think that even strength are going to beat Indiana anyway. I just think that's a matchup that's not good for them. But it's clear that they match up pretty well with the Boston Celtics. It's clear that they match up pretty well with the Milwaukee Bucks. The top teams, well, let me back that up a little bit. The top teams certainly in the Eastern Conference, right? Because, I mean, we haven't even looked at the Western Conference. The Western Conference could be an entirely different animal. But look at what's going on with the Clippers right now. The Clippers, I had pegged as the top team in basketball. I anticipate that they would win the NBA title. They still might. But the Lakers are 30-7. Nuggets are next, and the Clippers are in third place, 26-12. The Sixers are 25-14. That's not that different from where the Clippers are. It's not that different at all. 25-14, rather. So, still, though, not that different. So, if we're looking at the Clippers as maybe one of the top teams, and it's the record that is pushing us away from the Sixers and saying, oh, yeah, you can't be losing these games or whatever. As far as I'm concerned, the Sixers are a playoff team. They're varsity enough to make the playoffs, and then they're going to be playing against these good teams that you're kind of built to beat. That's why I'm holding on, and I'm good to go with rolling with Brett Brown and maintaining his status as the head coach of the Sixers because I want to see what it looks like. So far, it's looking good against the top teams. Now, my expectations are higher than some. As a result, if you're going to get that, remember, if you were a fan of the show early on, and we're going to get back to the specifics of Simmons and Embiid in a matter of moments here, but early on when we were talking about the Sixers just getting good a couple of years ago, turning the corner away from the process years and away from the tanking years to the progress years, right? I said that when the Sixers are good, Brett Brown should have a shorter leash than every other coach in the NBA. And the reason why I said that is because he was given a longer leash during the tank years when you have no expectations for player development. You have no expectations for wins and losses. You can look at your coaching decisions and things like that, but does it really matter because the front office and ownership are trying to lose all the games that they can, right? Like, there are a lot of things. With all due respect to Brett, and in an honest, quiet moment, he might actually agree with this statement. During those years, how well he did or how much he did mattered relatively little in the Sixers' grand plan. Right. On the flip side, though, you're one of 30 NBA head coaches. You're collecting an NBA coach's check, all that kind of stuff. Right. So when the expectation, the heat turns up and the team's pretty good, that's why I'm actually surprised that he's lasted this long to begin with, because you lose to Boston in the second round of the playoffs again. Just like the Sixers did at the start of the process, that would almost be enough, I think, for a lot of people to be like, all right, time to find something new. If the Raptors don't win the NBA title, I don't know what happens to Brett Brown, by the way. Raptors go on to win the title, and it's like, okay, you lost to the eventual champions, you lost to Kawhi Leonard, MVP, et cetera, blah, 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 right? But if they lose to the Bucks in the next round, who knows what happens to Brett Brown? Now, at this point, you've got Brown in position to have to coach without your best player. You don't have Joel Embiid. You're going to ask Ben Simmons to be, if not your best player, one of your two best players. And now the chips are going to have to fall where they may, because this is not just the Ben Simmons evaluation period. This is not just the period where we're going to potentially get to see all the stuff that Ben Simmons has purportedly been working on, from a free throw shooting perspective to an aggressiveness standpoint to is he actually going to shoot three-pointers? But you also have to look at Brett Brown and what Brown himself is going to do now that you have effectively what I'll call, like, you know, the queen on the board, right? Like, you've got Ben Simmons, who is the big piece on the chessboard, as my microphone takes a tumble. The big piece on the chessboard, right? Brett Brown now has the ability to deploy Ben Simmons in a variety of defensive situations that perhaps he didn't previously because of Joel Embiid. Offensively, probably the same thing because of Joel Embiid, right? Like, you've got a lot of things that you can look at with the coach and say, not only is this going to be a very big month for Embiid, but it's also going to be a big month considering Ben Simmons and Brett Brown both have to step up beyond what they have done here in the recent going. It's going to be good. Now, don't get me wrong. This isn't a season-defining situation, right? You've got Joel Embiid returning before the end of the regular season, almost certainly. You've got Ben Simmons. It's not a referendum on him in terms of it being a contract year or anything like that. You've got lots of term left on his contract, things like that. But for Brett Brown, when the team has to come out before the season starts, say, hey, Brett Brown's our head coach, everything is kind of under a microscope. Everything about what Brown is doing now is going to be analyzed and hacked apart and dissected and things like that. Which actually does kind of lead me to the questions that I wanted to ask. Unfortunately, they do have to come on the other side of this breather because I've talked straight through. But it does involve coaching and asking questions of coaches. And it's something that is a big-time strength of Brett Brown. But there are some other individuals in the city that it seems like that might not be their finest feature. 610-632-0975. This is the Joe Torti Show. Final solo segment's coming up next. And then it's me and Rob Motti hanging out until 10 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. In 15 minutes time, I'll be joined by Rob Motti. We will hang out together until 10 o'clock. I got questions for Rob. I've got questions for you. And, of course, your phone call, 610-632-0975. Greg in Philly is next on The Fanatic. What's going on, Greg?
What's going on? I want to talk about Brett Brown.
Yep.
And how he's actually working miracles, designing an offense to go 4-on-6 every night. Because Ben Simmons is actually an extra defender. In a half-court set, he brings nothing. He can't post up, can't run pick and roll, can't beat his man off the dribble, can't shoot free throws, and can't shoot a jumper. So what do you expect the coach to do in a situation where he got to design an offense like that?
Well, actually, Greg, you know what? I think that one of the things that Brown is going to start to experiment with, just because the early returns have been good, is that he actually is an interesting piece in the pick and roll game when he's not the ball handler, when he's playing it with Josh Richardson and some of these other guys. So I think that that's something that they might go to a lot in the half court because of what you just laid out there, all the limitations that he has.
Now, when he does that, where's Embiid and Al Horford going to be?
It's a good question. I mean, the idea is, I would think, depending on who's on the floor, that at the very least with Embiid, you'd invert to try to pull away a big guy, and then you've got Horford down on the low block, like in the dunker spot almost on the other side.
Because with Ben's strengths, which are not many, he's just in the way of our most important piece. And when we try to, when they say post Embiid up every play, he can't. Because Ben said Man is in the way the whole time.
Yeah.
And Al Horford just looked lost. And it's not Al Horford's fault.
But do you think that he's starting to... I thought that he actually has started in the last couple games, Greg, to turn it around a little bit. Do you think that's not the case?
Ben Simmons' bad games look like his good games. It's either he make his layups or he misses layups.
Mm. Well, I mean, the other thing is obviously the turnovers. And, Greg, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. That kind of does make a difference. And his aggression, I think, is something that does come and go, unfortunately. Now, the question is, are you going to see aggressive Ben Simmons more? Or is it just going to continue to be this, you know, up and down kind of situation? I can tell Greg not the biggest Ben fan, and I understand. There are certainly limitations offensively, certainly. But I also get the other side that the Sixers, you know, say defensively from a rebounding perspective and things like that, there are a lot of other things that he does as well as being a passer, good in transition, et cetera, et cetera. All right, quickly. Questions. First things first, I would like to know the big discussion about Brett Brown has always been, hey, like, I just like the guy. I think that he's a good coach, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of thing, right? People like Brett Brown. They like the way that he talks about basketball. They like the way that he talks about life. They like his perspective. They like his energy. There's a lot of things to like when you're listening to Brett Brown speak. And it seems by and large, and Josh can check me on this if he disagrees, by and large, it seems to me that he focuses a lot on being as earnest as possible. Not like selling the farm or anything like that, but I get the impression from Brett Brown that he is as forthright as it is possible to be. Like, I think that most of the time, among coaches, he is more open than a lot of other coaches are, and it's one of the attractive things about him, right? Contrast that with Doug Peterson, who has kind of an aw shucks persona. And I'm not trying to call names here, so I won't. But has been one of the least truthful coaches in the NFL when it comes to, I don't know, anything. Every press conference that you... Like with Chip Kelly, you just got the impression that he didn't have time for you and that, you know, he was trying to say whatever it took to get you to go away. Like that is the impression that I got from Chip Kelly at almost every press conference, right? He just wanted to go and do his football stuff. He didn't want to talk to you. And that was it. With Doug, I don't get that impression. With Doug, I get more of the impression of that guy that you know. Everybody's got a guy that they know that they enjoy talking to, that gets along with people, you know, can make you laugh, things like that. And then it turns out that like 60, 70% of the stuff that they were saying was either exaggerated or not true. Right? Like we all have that person. Actually, in my friend group, there is, we call it the blank ratio, which is, you know, you talk to somebody and like there's 20% of the truth is in there and then 80% makes it a good story, right? So here's the question that I have for you. Does it matter? Period. Does it matter that Brett Brown is the way that he is versus the way that Doug Peterson, for example... Last time we were together, we went through the entire Howie and Doug press conference where the highlight of the press conference actually was where Doug Peterson was talking about the coordinators. It was, I don't know if Jim Schwartz is going to be back and Mike Rowe and Carson Walsh will absolutely be back 100%. And then the next day, it seems that the inverse is true. It seems like it is absolutely Jim Schwartz's job if he wants it. And those guys are given their walking papers. Now, people have been all over me on Twitter assuming that, first of all, that I'm in these press conferences and that I'm demanding access to people's lives and stuff like that before everybody else. I'm not. I could be, but I'm not. No, my problem is I understand if you don't want people to learn that they've been fired through the media, even though that happens all the freaking time. It happens in my industry all the freaking time. No, my problem is people say, oh, yeah, well, you don't want to build up ill will towards future coaches or towards people that could come into the organization later or whatever by whatever, not saying that they're safe. I look at it the other way. I don't know if Mike Rowe's married. For the sake of our argument, let's say that he is. I don't know for sure. How do you think his wife feels hearing the press conference the day before? It's like Mike is safe. And you're worried about that literally since before the new year. You're like, oh, my God. We made it again. Don't have to move. Don't have to pull the kids out of school, whatever, blah, 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 right? And then the next day, he gets handed his papers. You feel better? Do you feel better because you didn't get fired in the media? Or does it feel worse because you were told one thing and then, boom, the rug gets pulled out from under you? Now, in the grand scheme of things, the only thing that matters, the only thing that matters is winning and winning championships. I guarantee you in 50 years, no one will remember or have any clue what kind of person Vince Lombardi was or Don Shula or any of these guys from a personality standpoint. They'll remember the sound bites. They'll remember the wins, etc., etc. Okay? I'm not naive enough to think that good guys finish first all the time and that's the only thing that matters. But as far as I'm concerned, Doug has been unnecessarily dishonest with a lot of things over the course of the year and the course of his tenure as the Eagles head coach. Now, I get some of it's gamesmanship. My problem is, what's wrong with saying, hey, as Howie was saying, we're going through our evaluation process and we're kind of up in the air about everything. So I'm not going to talk. You know how Howie said when people asked him about Malcolm Jenkins' contract, he has the infuriating perfect answer. He says, well, a blanket statement, we're not going to talk about anybody's contracts, but we really appreciate what Malcolm's brought to the table, and we understand where he's coming from, so it's something that we're going to be working on and figuring out. Boom! That is the way that you answer that question. Hey, Doug, will Mike Groh and Jim Schwartz be back? And Carson Walsh, will everybody be back? Well, our evaluation process is starting as a lie, as we laid out, because you know how you feel about things over the course of the season. But you could say, hey, you know what? There's a lot of things up in the air right now that we're working on, trying to figure out how we can get better in all facets. So until we have a grand plan laid out, it's tough for me to comment on like individual coaches and where they're going to be and who's going to be brought back. I really like all the work that we did here. And obviously, there was some more work left to be done at the end. So we're going to see what the straightest, clearest path to get to that is. And then we'll go from there. Like, that's the answer. It's not, oh yeah, they'll be back. With Jim, he's our defensive coordinator right now. Because it just feels the day after. Slimy. It just does. 610-632-0975. Doesn't matter to you whether your coach tells the truth in the media. Not about everything. I'm not asking you to give away the game plan. But does it matter? It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.